Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, presented by PW Torch and MMATorch.com. My name is Sean Ennis, and I'll be your host tonight. And since Rob Vallejos, Zach Haydorn, and Rick Monsey are all on assignment this week, I'll be flying solo. Now, we've got a few things to talk about tonight, and I want to start off with the UFC on Fox card from this past weekend. I want to hit the high points of the card, and we're going to start at the main event between Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier. Now, for me, this was a tough fight. I think it was a tough fight for a lot of people. These two are pretty popular and a lot of fun to watch. It's tough to watch either of them take a loss, or at least it's too bad to watch either of them take a loss. Now, this was a pretty tremendous fight with a hyper-violent ending by Poirier. And it was a shame for Alvarez that that elbow that he landed led to that finish, the 12-6 elbow, especially since he was kind of instructed by his corner to throw that elbow, which is just a shame that that led to the stand-up and then led to the ending. But at the end of the day, like Poirier said in his post-fight interview, don't throw illegal strikes, and that's probably well said. Now, I don't think this hurts Alvarez's stock very much, if at all. He's going to be a guy that people like to watch fight, much like Poirier, much like Justin Gaethje and those kind of guys. These guys are all hyper-violent guys, and they're going to be on cards, and they're not going to have a problem getting paid. So this is not going to hurt his stock very much at all. Now, going forward, what do you do with these guys? Well, starting with Poirier. To me, this is kind of a no-brainer. You have Poirier fight Tony Ferguson on the same card that Nurmagomedov and McGregor are supposed to fight on. Whether that's scheduled or not, or whether it's tentative for later this year, I'm not sure if that's actually finalized or not, but I know that's what they're looking to do. But I think you definitely put them on the same card. That way you've got four fighters, you know, a few of whom tend to pull out of fights, you know, Nurmagomedov, Ferguson. Those guys tend to pull out of fights from time to time. And I think if you have these two fights at the top of the card, you could put any two of them in there for a feasible title match, whether that's an interim title match or a full-fledged title match. I think you can mix and match them any way you want to. And as for Alvarez, yeah, really, you can put him in there with anybody. You can put him in there with Edson Barboza, who's just coming off of a loss. I think that's a pretty easy fight to make. You can't make a bad fight with Eddie Alvarez. So moving down the card, we had Jose Aldo in the co-main event, knocking out Jeremy Stephens, or getting a TKO victory with the liver shot, and that was a nasty, nasty liver shot. And Jose Aldo proving that he can still hang with the top of the 145 division, even though Jeremy Stephens has been around a while and has logged a lot of fights at both lightweight and featherweight. He is still a tough dude and is tough to put away. So that was a big win for Aldo. He needed to get off the skid there. It's easy to forget that prior to his 1-3 record in his last four fights, that Jose Aldo kind of put together a streak that has made him the best featherweight in MMA history, at least in my book, and has always been a sturdy guy and tough to put away himself. So you can hurt Aldo, and he's been hurt before, but he's not easily put away despite his recent TKO losses. So for him, I see a pretty clear path as well. I think you give him the winner of the fight this weekend between Cub Swanson and Renato Carnejo, and you're going to have to excuse me for butchering names tonight because I do that from time to time, even though I do know who these guys are. So, you know, sometimes you just have a hard time with names, and that's how I do it. So, next on the card, let's see, we had Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Tisha Torres. This was a pretty straightforward story here. Tisha Torres wanted to get the fight to the ground. She couldn't do it. Jędrzejczyk was able to beat her in the clinch and take a pretty solid unanimous decision victory here. And I'm not going to say a lot about the commentary on Saturday night, but in this particular fight, I was kind of confused by Daniel Cormier's commentary. I didn't agree with a lot of what he was saying here. I don't know if he was in the bag for Torres or what, but I wasn't. I don't know that I was watching the same fight that he was watching. Anyway, in the fight prior to this was Alex Hernandez and Olivier Aubin-Mercier, and Hernandez picking up the win there. Hernandez looks like a pretty solid prospect. Unfortunately for him, lightweight is just ridiculously deep. And, you know, he wants a top 10 fighter in his next fight. I don't know that that's going to happen. You know, you got to kind of work your way up for a little bit longer to really jump into that pool. If you got a guy in Hernandez's position, the best thing that he can do for himself is to stay ready to fight and jump in on a moment's notice against some of those big name guys. You know, he could be on the lookout for, you know, guys like Kevin Lee or something like that. Kind of the, the guys that are in the top 10 but aren't, you know, solidly that haven't necessarily staked their claim for perpetual top 10 fighter. You want to get those guys that even, you know, I say Kevin Lee is a it falls into that category, even though he's in the top half of the top 10 probably at this point. You know, he's more of a newcomer there than other guys. So that's Alex Hernandez. He's going to be around for a while. He's going to be a fun guy to watch. Speaking of prospects on the card, Islam Makhachev, I think, did a really nice job in taking out Cajun Johnson. You had Hakeem Dawodu taking out Austin Arnett. I think he's going to be one to watch. And that's pretty much the long and short of it on that card. Nice little card. The top two fights, obviously, were worth tuning in for. The rest of the main card, nothing really super special there. Kind of straightforward action. And on the undercard, John McDessie, Ross Pearson was a fun fight. Ross Pearson is a zombie, and McDessie took a pretty clear unanimous decision there as well. Dustin Ortiz had a nice head kick knockout. Devin Powell had a nice body shot knockout, kick to the body, and that was a fun one too. If you're watching the beginning of that fight, that fight only lasted about 2 minutes. But if you're watching the beginning of the fight and you figure that someone's going to win by knockout, excuse me, if you figured someone was going to win by knockout, it probably would have been Herrera, his opponent. But as we know, things aren't always what they seem in the beginning of the fight here in MMA. So that is the UFC on Fox card from Saturday night. Not a ton of takeaways there, but the top of the card was certainly newsworthy. Nice to see Jose Aldo get a win and get back on track. Same for Jan Jacek, actually. And I didn't talk about what's next for her, but really, to me, I mean, she's fought everyone at strawweight, so it's tough to say. You know, is she going to fight someone like Michelle Waterston, who she hasn't fought before? Is she going to end up with a rematch? There's not a lot of intriguing fights for her at that weight, at 115, unless she moves up to 125. So, you know, she's got two losses against Rose Namajunas, two emphatic losses. And, you know, she's kind of in a similar situation to Jose Aldo, except in a far shallower division. So it'll be interesting to see what she decides to do, whether she's going to, you know, she obviously said she wants to stick around at strawweight and get that belt back. I mean, she's really going to have to force the UFC's hand to get another title shot against Namajunas if she ends up being a longer term champion. And that's a tough thing to do when you've got two losses against a champ, kind of like Jose Aldo and Max Holloway. So, but really, in Aldo's case, he may have an easier time of getting a third shot just because of the depth of the division. You know, he's got there's more guys, more contenders to take out there. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch really both of them just to kind of see where their trajectory goes from here. Aldo probably definitely has a lot less tread on the tire than Jan Jacek at this point. So a lot of storylines to watch in those divisions. And lightweight is just, it's a shark tank, and the championship picture is just a disaster. So between those two divisions, you know, there's a lot going on. And with Holloway out indefinitely, you know, that's another one that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. So moving on, we got a couple, one news item in particular that I wanted to talk about, and that was the stripping of Colby Covington of the interim title, the welterweight interim title. And a lot of people seem to have a problem with this. You know, you put together an interim title so that you have a number one contender, really, for a championship. That's all it is. It's a number one contender's trophy. You know, it's a physical manifestation of a number one contender. So to me, when you strip an interim champion, all it means is that they're not getting the next title shot, you know. And we all know, we've seen, if you watch the UFC for any amount of time, you've seen guys get title shots guaranteed and then taken away. One that comes to mind immediately for me is Carl Parisian back when GSP was the champion. Carl Parisian was guaranteed a title shot. It may have only been once. It may have been once or twice. I can't remember exactly how many times, but he was injured at some point. And this was back in the day when the division was not nearly as deep as it is now, and GSP was running roughshod over it. Parisian got hurt and just never ended up getting a title shot. And that's, you know, he was still in the UFC for a long time after this and just never ended up getting a shot. So, you know, these title shots, they're guaranteed until they're not. So, you know, to me, I said at the time that Covington won that interim belt that I would pay not to watch him fight Tyron Woodley. I hate that fight. If you've seen both guys fight, you know that is not an intriguing matchup. You know, unless you really like wrestling matches, because to me that it's just it would be. You know, Tyron Woodley is a guy who managed to have a boring fight with Stephen Thompson. And, you know, that's looking less and less difficult as time goes on. But this is a time when Stephen Thompson was having really exciting fights. And Woodley just, he's either going to be hyper-violent in the first part of the fight, or he's going to do nothing. And against Covington, you know, he can talk about how he wants to blast Covington and all that kind of stuff and punish him and all that, but I'm not buying it. You know, you watch Woodley against Robbie Lawler, and it made sense for Woodley to go after Lawler the way he did and kind of chase that early knockout. But when it doesn't make sense to do that, to his credit, he's not going to, and he's going to wrestle. And, you know, that's fine as a strategy, but you put him in there with Covington, I just think that's a... It's an awful fight waiting to happen. I think it's a much more intriguing fight to get Darren Till in there. So I am fine with that happening. You know, I wasn't one that thought Covington was all that deserving of a title shot anyway. So, you know, stripping him of a meaningless interim title, you know, to me, I don't really care. So I'm fine with that. I think going forward, we'll probably see that fight happen, unfortunately, anyway. If Woodley can get past Till, and he probably will, you know, obviously probably the thing that is the most offensive, if anything is offensive to you about Till getting a title shot, it's probably that Till has problems or has had problems making weight. So, you know, time will tell if that ends up being an issue or not. And, we'll kind of go from there. You know, the UFC wants to have those title fights at the top of cards. And if Covington couldn't go when it was time to get his shot, you know, they got to do what they got to do. It's at the end of the day, it's a business, and they got to do what makes sense. And really, they got to put on fights that people want to see. And I understand that, you know, that the trash talk kind of builds up those fights, but Covington is he's just not good at the trash talk. You know, his act is much more, it feels much more put on than an act like Chael Sonnen, and Chael Sonnen's act felt really put on too. So, I don't know. He's not intriguing to me. It's not an intriguing style matchup. So I don't get the appeal of that one. But moving on. Now, speaking of title fights, we've got, how do you like that transition? We've got UFC 227 coming up this Saturday night between, and the main event being between TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt for the bantamweight title. And those two had a kind of a verbal sparring session this past Saturday night on the Fox card. And it wasn't good, not surprisingly. When Dominic Cruz isn't involved in a verbal sparring match, it usually isn't good. So and this persisted here. It wasn't enjoyable to watch. But luckily, these two put on good fights, and their last fight was fun to watch. And this one should not be any exception. These are the two fighters to me who out Dominic Cruz, even though Dillashaw didn't pick up the decision win in his fight against Cruz. To me, I thought he won that fight. So this is a good fight for the welterweight or the bantamweight title. If I'm going with picks, you know, I don't have anyone to bounce picks off of here today. I'd probably stick with Dillashaw, although Garbrandt winning would not shock me. I do think Dillashaw kind of has his number, so I think that he'll go ahead and pick up that win.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Also on the card, we've got Demetrius Johnson and Henry Cejudo. I'm debating whether to get into the Demetrius Johnson as GOAT debate, and I'm probably not going to since, again, I don't have anyone to bounce that off of. But in a nutshell, Demetrius Johnson is not the GOAT, not the greatest fighter ever. You know, greatest flyweight ever? Yes, absolutely. Greatest fighter? No, not pound for pound. Anyway, Johnson and Henry Cejudo, this is a decent fight. I think if flyweight were a deeper division, then this could be a more intriguing fight in, you know, a year or a year and a half. You know, Cejudo only fought Demetrius Johnson 2 years ago, and he fought him at a time when he wasn't completely ready for it. You know, he hadn't had any finishes to that point, and he was mostly going to be, you know, he hadn't had any finishes in the UFC, I should say that, and he wasn't super dominant, but he got a few wins, and flyweight is not a deep division, to say the least, and ended up being beaten pretty decisively, pretty early in the fight. And since then, you know, yeah, he's come out and he's looked really good. He lost the split decision to Joe Benavidez, then knocked out Wilson Hayes and beat Sergio Pettis by decision. Pretty dominant decision late last year. Now, to me, is he ready for Demetrius Johnson? You know, it's hard to say with a guy like Cejudo because, you know, we're talking about an elite athlete. He's obviously a guy who's been wrestling his whole life, and at an elite level for a lot of that. So it's hard to count out a guy like that. That being said, I don't think you're going to see Henry Cejudo go in there and beat Demetrius Johnson. I just don't think that's going to happen. Johnson is too good in too many areas to just get caught. You know, he's not a Wilson Hayes who's going to only look to grapple. He's not, he's not Sergio Pettis who's only going to look to strike. There's no point where I don't think Henry Cejudo is better than Demetrius Johnson at anything, really. You know, and that's kind of the tale of the fight. You know, Cejudo would beat Demetrius Johnson in a straight wrestling match, yes, but you know, when we're talking about MMA, it's just you. I mean, you know, if you've watched, but these different styles adapt differently to MMA. You know, you can talk about a guy who is a gold medal wrestler and he gets in there and he can get out wrestled by a guy who's never wrestled at an amateur level, just because they wrestle for MMA. And there's different parts of each discipline that just don't translate or translate differently into MMA than they do in the traditional sense. So I think that's a problem for Cejudo. You know, he's going to go in there and he's going to dominate a lot of guys, and he's got some power. He's got some punching power, but Demetrius Johnson he's so hard to hit. And Cejudo, yeah, he can catch you and he can hurt you, but I'm not sure how he's going to catch up with or hurt Demetrius Johnson. So I see Johnson winning. You know, it may not be another first round knockout, but I don't think it's going to be close. And that's that fight. And those are really the two. I mean, there's not a ton on this card. Those are the two big fights, the two at the top of the card. And then you've got a few kind of semi-intriguing prospect fights. And you do have Cub Swanson and Renato Carneiro, or Cornejo. I don't know how to say that name. But anyway, that's a decent fight. You know, Carneiro has looked pretty good in the UFC, outside of his loss to Brian Ortega, T-City. And that was by, I think he did get tapped by Ortega, but I don't think it was with a triangle. Anyway, he's looked pretty good outside of that fight in the UFC. He hasn't lost to anyone else. That's his only loss professionally, actually. So this is actually a pretty decent fight. Cub Swanson is on a bit of a slide right now, having lost his last two to T-City, Brian Ortega and Frankie Edgar. You know, this is a tough fight to call. And if I had to pick one, geez, I'd probably go with Swanson here, but I mean, that's by no means a sure thing. You know, Carneiro again has looked pretty good. I don't know that I've seen enough out of him that I think he's going to take out a guy like Swanson. But at the same time, you know, Swanson looked good for a nice little period there after he had lost to Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway a few years back. He rattled off like four straight wins, including the one against Duho Choi in that incredible fight. And then a fight against Artem Lobov as well. But since then, he's lost, obviously, to the two at the top of the division, Brian Ortega and Frankie Edgar. You know, it's hard to judge a guy after losing two fights to probably two of the top three or four fighters at the top of the division. So I hate to count out Cub Swanson because of those losses. If you look back at Cub Swanson's losses, he's only lost to elite guys. You know, after his first loss to Shannon Guggerty in 2004, for Pete's sake. He's been doing this for 14 years. But he's only lost to Jose Aldo, Chad Mendez, Ricardo Lamas, Frankie Edgar, and Max Holloway, and Brian Ortega. So we're not talking about a guy who occasionally slips up against scrubs. He doesn't do that. So, you know, it's hard to pick against Swanson for me at this point. So this will be a real, if Carneiro can pull this off, this will be a real coup for him. And then besides that, we've got a couple of guys who were on Dana White's Contender Series, being Kevin Holland, and I believe, was it Montel Jackson was the other one? I'm going to look this up real quick. Montel Jackson, yes, Montel Jackson was also on there. Jackson looks like a guy who is, he could be fun to watch. You know, nice, he's got a nice striking pedigree, so we'll see how that translates for him. There's also a, what looks to be, they're setting up a showcase fight for Pollyanna Viana, who is fighting J.J. Aldrich. Viana has, let's check this out too. I believe she's got one fight in the UFC. Yeah, one fight in the UFC. She's got a bunch of submissions. It should be interesting to see what she can do. Now, she's another fighter at strawweight. So, yeah, she'll be one to watch. And that's probably going to be a showcase for her against Aldrich. Probably a safe bet to say that she's going to win that one. And probably by submission. So, moving on, that's really about it for the UFC 227 card this Saturday night. Interesting card, not a blockbuster card like we've had over the past couple of months, but surely intriguing at the top. So that's about it for fight recaps and fight previews, and I believe for news as well. Really, there's not a whole lot going on outside of fight announcements and things like that. I'll touch on the referee quote unquote controversy from Saturday night. When people were talking about Mark Goddard, or is it Goddard now? I can't keep track of pronunciations. Anyway, referee for the Poirier Alvarez fight, Mark Goddard, kind of catching some heat for standing up the fight, resetting the fight after Alvarez's illegal elbow. To me, I don't think you can fault him too much for that. I mean, it's a dumb rule, but it's not his. You know, he knows he just has to enforce the rules. And you know, I have a hard time faulting referees for really much of anything in MMA. It is a hard sport to officiate, especially when you take into account the fact that the rules aren't the same everywhere, and some rules are almost unenforceable or, you know, so arbitrary. I mean, when you look at the 12-6 elbow, if it's got any arc on it, it's not illegal. And it's arguable whether that elbow had an arc on it. But, you know, Goddard didn't have like a protractor that he could, you know, pop out that replay and hold up a protractor to see if he had any angle to it. So, you know, you do what you think is best in the moment. And that is a tough assignment for anyone, even a guy like Goddard, who's been around for a long, long time. And, you know, it's harder to defend maybe the stand-ups in the Hernandez Mercier fight. But, you know, that really didn't affect the outcome of that fight either. So, you know, it's to me, it's tough to really condemn a guy like Goddard or really most MMA referees for resetting a fight like that. You know, it's a tough decision to make in the moment. You know, it looked like an illegal strike. It's close enough to an illegal strike that it shouldn't have been thrown, even though it really, I mean, if you think about it, that strike did basically no damage at all. So, you know, MMA is a tough sport to officiate, you know, especially when you talk about stuff like that. You talk about eye pokes, which are illegal, but how do you officiate them? Because there's no, you know, do you take points? Can you take points? What's the rule? There are no rules for a lot of things and no guidelines for what referees are to do in the case of some fouls. So, you know, you do what you think is best. And I have a hard time faulting him for that. Moving on to the world of wrestling, I've not been following a lot lately. You know, I've been mostly following NXT, quite honestly. You know, I catch the occasional tidbit of Raw or SmackDown. I mostly listen to Wade Keller's breakdowns on the Wade Keller hotline to see what's happening and see if there's anything worth tuning in for. And then I'll catch the clips on Hulu or I'll follow a little bit on Twitter while the shows are on. But, I mean, to me, you have the specter of Roman Reigns hanging over everything on Raw. And it's just, it's not pleasant to me. I don't enjoy it. And even though Seth Rollins is doing awesome things, you know, I haven't always required that my favorite guy be at the top of the card. But when you put a guy that, you know, and this is me personally, and I know I'm not alone here. When you put a guy who I so dislike watching in his current role at the top of the card, it's just, it colors the whole thing for me. And it's difficult for me to watch and enjoy. So I haven't been. I've just been kind of getting bits and pieces. But I have been really enjoying the NXT product. And if you're behind on the show, you don't want to hear any spoilers, you may want to tune out for a couple minutes here. 3, 2, 1. But the program that they've been running with Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano over the past year or so is just masterful. And every chapter is just so well done and well thought out. And to see that kind of booking on an hour a week, there's no way that can't translate into more content. You know, even if you're doing these 3-hour shows, which is just ridiculous, first of all, but even if you're doing it on a 2 or 3 hour show, you know, you can take that same booking philosophy and apply it to larger rosters and more screen time. I mean, I don't understand why they don't apply the same philosophies. Well, I do understand why they don't do it, but, you know, it's obviously the whims of Vince McMahon at this point. But to me, it's so much more pleasant to watch NXT than it is any of the WWE product at this point. So heading into SummerSlam, you know, there's not a lot that is capturing my imagination at this point. So we'll kind of see where things go, if anything kind of piques the interest. But to me right now, NXT is the much better booked promotion, and it's just a lot more fun to watch in my estimation. As for New Japan, you know, that's the other thing that I just don't have the time to follow it as closely as I want to, but I am trying to catch up with the G1 Climax. I haven't seen any of it yet, but that is, it's on the list of things to do. So I'll be catching up with that as time permits. And that is always, you know, New Japan is always a fun product to watch. And that's not as, if you're not familiar with New Japan, it's not as storyline driven. It's more, I mean, there are storylines that kind of work their way over the course of several events, but most of their product is tailored toward the in-ring product. You know, it's mostly based on matches, and their storylines are kind of match-driven rather than the other way around most of the time. You know, they do have the occasional blood feud or something like that, but with the way it's booked right now, it really focuses a lot on the in-ring product. So with all those topics having been covered, I believe we are done for this week. Hopefully we'll have someone else in the chair next to me here next week, whether that be Zach Haydorn or Rick Monsey or Rob Vallejos. Hopefully we'll hear from those guys soon. Until then, my name is Sean Ennis. You can find me on Twitter at Sean Ennis. That's SHAWNENNIS. Or if you want to hear me in another podcast form, which is less free-flowing and more kind of regimented, less stream of consciousness, you can check out my other podcast called Stories of Your and Yours. That's a weekly short story podcast where I read short stories. I narrate short stories and add music and sound effects to kind of bring them to life. Check that out. That's at SYY Podcast on Twitter, or you can check out the website syypodcast.libsyn.com, and you can get that, or you can just search for it in any, however you get your podcasts, in whatever app you use, whether that's Apple Podcast or Overcast or what have you. Check it out. But for now, thanks for tuning in, thanks for listening, and we'll hope to see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
No.